A low on Tuesday night down to 64, and then on Wednesday, partly sunny with a high back up to 79. We're at 72 right now in downtown Butler. I'm Tracy Morgan in the Next Year Bank studios. Next Year Bank, your hometown community bank. Your news time, 12:30. Dave Malarkey is coming up next with It's Your Turn. Thanks for joining us, and have a good day.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Monday edition of It's Your Turn. It's a book talk day, and we'll be chatting in just a few moments with our guest, Kate Lindsay, from the South Butler Community Library. They have chosen a fascinating nonfiction book to talk about this month. It's called Midnight in Chernobyl. A couple of program notes for you. First of all, coming up on tomorrow's program, one of our guests will be Jason Beckwith from Action in Recovery. And there is a gathering coming up on Saturday, September 7th here in Butler. And more information about that on Facebook, Action in Recovery. This is the program that is dealing with the opioid crisis. Started a year or so ago, I guess. And doing well. We'll get the latest update on that. Find out what's going on at that gathering on September 7th. Jason Beckwith will be with us on tomorrow's program. And we have lots of other stuff coming up this week as well. Also, while we have a moment, let me tell you that next month's book talk will feature guests from the Mars Area Public Library. And they have chosen the book Made, M-A-I-D, Made by Stephanie Land. It's a story of hard work, low pay, and a mother's will to survive as she takes a job as a maid. So that'll be coming up in September. September 23rd will be the date for the next book talk. But as I mentioned, we're going to be chatting in just a few moments here with Kate Lindsay from South Butler Community Library about Midnight in Chernobyl. I was not familiar with this book, and I must confess, I didn't know a whole lot of detail about the nuclear disaster at Chernobyl in the Soviet Union. I mean, you know, if you had have asked me Chernobyl, I could have told you what it was and the approximate time. Back in the mid-1980s, but I really didn't know a whole lot of detail about it. This book is an exhaustive examination, and I mean it's close to 500 pages. It's a big book, but it's a good read. In fact, it reads kind of like a novel, the way that the author, Adam Higginbotham, has written the story. And it talks not only about the disaster itself, but also the build-up to it in light of the Cold War that was going on at the time between the Soviet Union and the United States, and also the aftermath of the disaster at Chernobyl and how they tried to clean it up and how the Soviets tried to cover it up. And this really turned out to be one of the things that led to the demise of the Soviet Union. And I didn't realize that. I mean, I knew it was a bad thing. A lot of people died right away, and a lot of people died within the next year or so because of disease from the radiation. But I didn't realize that it was one of the key factors that brought down the Soviet Union. So we'll talk about that, too, and it's discussed at length in the book Midnight in Chernobyl by Adam Higginbotham. It took a while to read this book. I read it over a period of several days, starting last week. It was not that hard of a read. Every once in a while, Higginbotham would explain a little bit about physics and splitting the atom and how that all worked. And he did it in a way that the layperson could understand it pretty readily. I mean, he had to think a little bit. I took a few notes, but it wasn't like a high-level physics class. It was a good book, great book, as a matter of fact. So we'll be talking about it here in just a few moments with Kate Lindsay. When she arrives here in the studio, she's been delayed a little bit by traffic here today, but she'll be with us very shortly. Midnight in Chernobyl. Hope you enjoyed our conversation that we had last Friday with Charlie Wilcox from the Vitalant organization, formerly Central Blood Bank here in western Pennsylvania. A very informative conversation with Charlie Wilcox about the continuing critical need for blood donors and just why we need them. And the shelf life of donated blood, and so on and so forth. Very good program, and I was certainly glad we were able to hook up with Charlie. He was actually visiting with us from California. We talked to him by phone, and it was nice of him to make some time for us. I first heard about the blood shortage early this summer, back in late June, early July, and I didn't realize that there was still this ongoing critical need for blood donors. So we were able to explore that at some length with Charlie Wilcox. Okay, we'll take a quick break and back with more of the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR right after these words.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary, and the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
When is a pencil more than a pencil? When it takes me from art class to gallery walls worldwide.
Staples is your back-to-school destination. Find all the supplies and inspiration you need. Come in store this week for great deals under $1. Staples one-subject notebooks are just 25 cents each, and Staples comp books, Elmer's 4-ounce glue, and 24-pack Crayola crayons are just 50 cents each. Staples, back to school and beyond. In store only. Offer ends 8/31/19. Limit 5 on Elmer's glue. Limit 30 on notebooks and crayons while supplies last.
Right now, you can get 5 cents off every gallon of fuel every day. That's 5 cents off every gallon with Make It Count rewards from Marathon. Plus, you can earn points for additional savings on fuel, airfare, hotels, and more. It's quick and easy to join. Just visit makeitcount.com/radio or download the free app. So start saving today with Make It Count from Marathon. Offer valid only at participating Marathon locations. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
How about the Pittsburgh Steelers last night? I was listening to the game. I don't like those night football games. They're just too late for those of us who have to get up at an early hour. But it was nice to hear Bill Hillgrove calling the action here on WISR last night as the Steelers once again pulled off a pretty nice victory. Well, we're going to be talking about a great book, I think, coming up on, I thought at least, on the next segment of It's Your Turn. Kate Lindsay is here from the South Butler Community Library. Kate, it's good to see you again.
Hi, it's nice to see you too.
I was looking back at my notes, and my goodness, the last time we chatted was back in December. I can't believe it was that long ago.
It doesn't seem like it.
No, it seems like it was a couple of months ago.
Right.
We talked about Dope Sick.
Yeah. We kind of get dark with our books, don't we? Felt bad when I recommended this. I don't know if people know that you let me choose what book we're going to read. And I always feel a little bit of pressure. I want to pick something I think you'll enjoy.
Oh, there's no pressure whatsoever. I do that on purpose. On only a few occasions over the years have I picked a book or suggested a book, but I like to let the staff at the various public libraries make the pick, because I'm surprised that way.
Yeah,
you know?
It's fun. It's fun to have someone pick a book. I get it. But when I'm reading it, I'm always wondering, are you liking it? Are you going to like this?
Well, I love this one. Midnight in Chernobyl. I was chatting with the listeners a couple of moments ago. If you would have asked me before I started to read this book, Chernobyl, what was Chernobyl? I could have said, yes, it was a nuclear disaster in the Soviet Union. I probably couldn't have given you the exact date, which was 1986, but I could have told you what happened. That was about it. I didn't really know a whole lot of detail. Did you? Were you familiar with it?
No, not at all, but that's the way they wanted it, right? They wish we didn't know what we knew now, but that was their demise.
They tried to cover it up a great deal, didn't they?
Unbelievable.
The early reports from the Soviet Union, and it was still the Soviet Union, by the way, at that time, were that an accident has occurred. They didn't even say it was a nuclear accident initially.
Right. Well, they didn't even let their own people know.
No.
And that's the saddest part. They waited too long. So
how did you stumble on this book? Obviously, it's in the library. Was it recommended to you by someone? Or?
No. Honestly, my husband and I watched the HBO miniseries, Chernobyl, and my husband loved it. And then I saw the book, and I thought, well, I'll get him the book for his birthday. And he read it, and he really liked it. So I read it, and so I read it a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. It's like a textbook almost.
I heard you
talking about Adam Higginbotham, and he does do a wonderful job of kind of dumbing it down or simplifying it so we can understand how a nuclear power plant is supposed to work. But I still don't think I could describe it.
Gets a little technical at times.
I'm glad I don't have to take a test on it.
I need to get you just a little bit closer to that microphone for me. That's grand. That'll be perfect. I want to make sure we can hear you.
Okay. The
author starts, obviously, he talks about the disaster itself, but he goes way back to the beginning. Whenever the plans were first laid out for this, actually a system of four nuclear reactors at Chernobyl. So this would have been, in fact, the book opens with a bunch of Soviet dignitaries gathering and pounding a couple of stakes into the ground and saying, okay, here's where we're going to build this thing.
Yeah, here's where we're going to build it, and we're going to send these young people out into the woods and let them, they built their own little community in the woods, mm-hmm. and that's where they started building this huge nuclear power plant, and with no money, because they didn't get paid. They were told to do it, and that's what they did. And mm-hmm. It sounded dreamy. It sounded like the best possible thing that could happen to a citizen in this country. They got out from under living in slums, living in gulags. I don't know. I don't want to say anything wrong.
Engineers, of course, but there were thousands and thousands of construction workers that had to come and build this thing. Not only the Chernobyl complex itself, but they built an entire city right across the railroad tracks from the power plant to house all of the workers who were needed to run the plant.
Right. It was so well thought out. Like, the whole concept sounded wonderful. How are we going to provide energy for all of our people? Mm-hmm. Well, let's build a nuclear power plant. So they start and they build that, and then they build the city of Pripyat. And it sounds majestic. I mean, there's a Ferris wheel. These people get to move into these buildings, and they think, by our standards, by what we're used to here in the United States, we wouldn't have thought it was wonderful. But for them, they thought that these apartment buildings it was just magic. They had hospitals, they had schools. They had
food in the food stores, which was a real problem in the Soviet Union at that time. In fact, At one point, they said, 5 different kinds of sausages, ! I mean, and this was unheard of for them.
Right. They had more food than the people in Kiev, they said. So everything was going so well. And it, well, everything appeared to be going well.
I must confess my ignorance of almost any detail about this. I didn't even realize exactly where Chernobyl was located. It's actually in Ukraine, which is now, of course, a separate republic within the Russian configuration right now. The USSR, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, no longer exists. But it's in Ukraine, and it's very close to the border with Belarus, which is another separate republic now. So I probably couldn't have pinpointed it on a map before I read this book.
I probably still couldn't, but that's okay.
By the way, there are some nice maps in the book, a map of the Soviet Union. Boy, when you see it, how big it is.
Right.
My goodness gracious, from St. Petersburg and Moscow, the hallway over to the Pacific Ocean to Vladivostok. Gargantuan country.
Well, it's funny you should say that. I had to look up a word that I'd never heard before. Gigantomania is a word that they used a couple times in the book. And the first time I thought, oh, that's perfect. It makes sense. But it kind of describes our country as well.
You're kind of like me. I look up words every once in a while. I noted that one as well. Kind of chuckled at it because I thought it was like a word that Higginbotham made up. But he knew right away what he was talking about.
Right, right.
Well, let's try to go back a little bit. Believe me, I was afraid there was going to be a lot of physics in this book. I took a course in physics in undergraduate school. It was the hardest course I ever took in my life. And I think I got out with a C+, and I was happy with that. It's beyond me. That's not my area of, that's not my strong suit, let's put it that way. But this guy was able to simplify it. I liked your term. He dumbed it down a little bit so that, I mean, you still had to focus, but it was the best explanation I ever had of nuclear power and radiation. Would you agree?
Right. I don't think I'm ever going to understand what happens when an atom splits, nor do I care. But he did a really good job of explaining the building that it was housed in and how much exploded when there was the explosion. And you think they went to great lengths to minimize it. The Russians just thought, we're going to do all of this, and it's never going to happen. And that, you know, whereas in the United States, after Three Mile Island, they just kept practicing and thinking, what will we do if this happens? And how can we minimize the fallout if this happens? Where the Russians just, you know, believed in themselves and thought, well, this will never happen. They're egomaniacs.
Well, they were obviously wrong.
Right.
We're talking, if you're joining us a little bit late here on It's Your Turn, it's a book talk day today. We do this once a month on the fourth Monday. With the cooperation of the Butler County Federated Libraries System, and it is the turn today of the South Butler Community Library in Saxonburg, and Kate Lindsay is with us. She's on staff there. The book is Midnight in Chernobyl by Adam Higginbotham. This is nonfiction. It's all absolutely true, researched for about 10 years by Higginbotham, although it does read kind of like a novel or even science fiction at times. It's a real page-turner, don't you think?
Absolutely. I think which is why I think it was such a good book, because he kind of covers everything. It's sort of a mystery and a thriller. There's suspense. Mm-hmm. There's even a little bit of romance, because he goes in and he gives us the background of the people that are involved in it, some of the people that help resolve the problem to some point. And the firefighter and his wife, so the firefighter goes to put out the fire. He gets horrible radiation poisoning, and his wife can't find him. Mm-hmm. So he gives that whole story that is kind of a thread through the whole book. And I think it's important. I think that's what makes a good book, is when you involve all of the elements.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly. I read one review, I think it was Publishers Weekly, I'm not sure now, that called the book disjointed, because he jumps around a little bit. I found it anything but. He would sometimes end a chapter with kind of a cliffhanger sentence, and then he would go back and talk a little bit about, you know, the history of splitting the atom and something like that, and then the next chapter would pick it up again. I thought that made it a very easy read, and it kept me turning the pages. I don't know about you.
Definitely.
I liked it. A couple of notes that I made, and believe me, I'm not going to burden people with a whole lot of physics here, but three German scientists, I read in my notes that I took, three German physicists in 1938 split an atom to produce an unprecedented burst of energy. And that was the first time that anyone had ever done this. In 1938, so that's just before the start of World War II. And of course, the United States started on the Manhattan Project, attempting to harness this energy in a bomb, which we succeeded in doing. The Soviets were also working on it. They had spies that found out about the U.S. Manhattan Project. They were working on it. They developed a bomb as well within a couple of years of the end of World War II. But then people began to say, how can we harness this power of the atom for other uses other than military, other than making bombs? And of course, one of the first things they thought was to generate electricity. Now, you have to understand, folks, and I'm sure many of you know this, we don't split the atom and then immediately generate electricity. The only reason they split the atom is to make heat, to boil water and make steam, and that drives turbines and that creates energy. The same way we can use hydroelectric power to spin turbines and generate electricity, or wind power, you know, the big windmills that you see, to spin turbines and generate electricity. So really the only thing they're using the nuclear power for is to generate great heat and boil the water, you know, to make steam.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have to tell any cook that when you make steam, you generate a lot of pressure, and that can be a little dangerous if it's not very, very, very closely regulated. And, of course, if it explodes, as it did at Chernobyl, you have this massive release of radiation, and it's just a disaster. I couldn't help but think about, well, you mentioned Three Mile Island, which was in 1979. Chernobyl happened in 1986, and how we didn't know for several hours what was going to happen there. It turned out to be, thank goodness, nothing. We also have Shippingport. I didn't realize until I read this book that Shippingport, which is right next door to us in Beaver County, was the first nuclear power station in the entire United States. Did you know that?
No.
I didn't either. It's being decommissioned, I think, in the not-too-distant future. But, you know, anytime you take off from Pittsburgh International Airport, within about 30 seconds, you're flying over those cooling towers from Shippingport. You can look down at them. I didn't know it was the first commercial nuclear-powered generating station in the United States. And there are plans. We'll have to use them once that plant is decommissioned. But there have been plans, you know, for a release of radiation from Shippingport, even to the point where they have exercises every so often. For example, Slippery Rock University would be in an evacuation zone if there was a disaster at Shippingport. And there are some other places in Butler County where people would be evacuated to as well. So the United States plans a little bit better than this for this than the Soviet Union did. They didn't have many plans at all because they didn't think anything could go wrong.
They never thought it would happen.
We also have to place this in the context of the Cold War, which Higginbotham does very well. You know, the U.S. and the Soviet Union were, we had the Cold War going on, we had the space race going on. We were just battling them at every turn. And the Soviets came up with this idea for a whole string of nuclear power generating plants that would stretch the whole way across the Soviet Union. And they built several of them.
Right.
But Chernobyl was to be the showpiece. It was to be the centerpiece.
Yep. Yep.
There were actually four reactors there. I didn't know that either. Did you?
No, I didn't know. When we heard that there was an explosion at Chernobyl, I didn't think there were four. I can't believe that the other three were never impacted.
Yeah, they were all right in a row.
One has a total meltdown, and the other three were secure. That was pretty remarkable.
It was reactor number four that exploded and blew up. One, two, and three came online earlier. And they're not online anymore, of course, but they didn't blow up. It was just that one nuclear reactor that did.
Right.
Do you remember the details of exactly what happened the night that it exploded? It was some sort of a safety test going on, right?
Right. The safety test was 2 years behind schedule, so it was one of these things. They wanted it done. And I don't even know that it came down to human error. In the running of the test, it was something faulty that they had discovered was wrong with the RBMK reactor prior to this. But instead of letting everybody know, they just kind of changed some verbiage in some of the manuals that you get, I guess, when you build an RBMK reactor. And they weren't aware of it. So this is when it gets into the technicalities of the cooling rods, and this is where I kind of lose interest, but what caused it. However, Adam Higginbotham goes to extreme measures almost minute by minute, telling what is happening in the control room. And ultimately, this Dyatlov, the guy, the big boss that's in the control room, is telling these two engineers what to do. And they're reluctant to do it, it seems. But he just keeps telling them to do it, which is the Soviet way, in that if they don't listen to him, they're going to be out of a job. So regardless of whatever happened, there is an explosion. If you want to explain how that happens, I don't feel up to it.
Well, I tried to take a few notes, and again, there are chapters on this in the book, but... first of all, it was late at night. It was around midnight. They'd started the overnight shift when they were going to do this testing. But safety equipment in the reactor, Reactor 4, had been disabled in order to allow operators to train on emergency procedures. That was the way it was supposed to go. But the fuel had been stacked incorrectly, and that led to one problem, and then it was just a chain reaction. It just mushroomed. As you said, series of goofs, human error. Much of the equipment had been cheaply built with poor quality concrete and poor quality tubing. That compounded the problems. And eventually, the whole roof of the darn thing just blew off. And it was an immediate disaster. Very disturbing to read about the details on this. Do you remember the part where that said that there was this blue-white light, this column of light, this pillar of light that shot right up into the sky?
Yes.
From the when the roof of the reactor blew, you could see it.
Right.
And it was the
ionization.
Ionizing radiation, which, by the way, and I didn't know this either, that cloud slowly spread over parts of Western Europe and into Scandinavia, particularly in Sweden.
Right. And they're the ones that finally said, hey, wait, something happened, and you're not being forthcoming with this information. So thankfully, someone in Sweden was paying attention, although what can you do at that point? A little late for the people in Russia.
There are meters and things, that we keep track of that sort of thing with the seismographs and other sorts of testing devices, and they did detect this heavy radiation in Sweden. As far as I know, no disastrous results there, as in Ukraine. Did they ever come up with an accurate total of how many people died as a result of Chernobyl?
Oh, yes. Isn't their final word like 30 people died? I think that's what the Russians finally agreed to at the end of it, that maybe 36 people died.
But the real estimates are like 5,000.
Yes. Yeah. It's a ridiculous understatement to think that only 30 people died.
That's what they tried to get away with. As I mentioned earlier, initially they just said there has been an accident.
It was really quite an eye-opener. You know, I'm sure we learned it in history. I don't know that I remembered it, and I don't know if we delved that deeply into it, how oppressed those people were, not only the citizens, but how the hierarchy is. And if the person above you tells you to do something,
you do it.
Even in the control room. So there's this horrible meltdown. Dyatlov sends the two engineers to go do something. He wants them to manually put these rods down. They needed to get these rods into the water. Mm-hmm. Manually go do that. And they're thinking that we can't do it, but he says to do it, so they have to go and act like they're going to do it. And then they come back, and numerous people come back and say, there is no reactor. It's gone. It blew up. And it's so hard for him to imagine that that could happen, that he just does not believe it, denies it.
We'll take a break. We're talking about, to me, a fascinating, harrowing, depressing at many times book, Midnight in Chernobyl by Adam Higginbotham. Back with more of It's Your Turn on a Monday, right after these words.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa. Does your small business need to work more effectively and efficiently? Then you need Sir Speedy Printing. If you are in business, they can print your letterhead, order forms, business cards, posters, and even do your bulk mailing, which includes printing your direct mail piece. They are the local experts. They know the sizing requirements, formats, and guidelines, and can probably do a bulk mailing for less than you can. The next time you need to do a direct mailing, consider stopping at Sir Speedy Printing for a free, no-obligation quote. Their bulk mailing service can save you time and money while helping grow your customer base. Stop by Sir Speedy Printing, 229 South Main Street, Butler.
Welcome back, good friends. It's the Monday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR. It's Book Talk Day. Kate Lindsay is here from the South Butler Community Library in Saxonburg. Where is the South Butler Community Library in Saxonburg, by the way? Are you right on Main Street?
Yes, we are.
And are you open every day?
We are not open on Sunday, but we're open Monday through Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Didn't you just get some newly remodeled space in the library? Do I recall that correctly?
We did, yes. Our library, because Saxonburg is a smaller town, it kind of functions as a community center. So we put a lot of our books on casters so we can roll them out of the way if we need to have a bigger meeting space. Yeah, it's nice. We're there Tuesdays and Thursdays are our long days. We're there until 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that a library as a community center is wonderful. You know,
me
whether
too.
It's a smaller library or one of the bigger ones like Butler or Cranberry, which are the two biggest in the county. I think it's great that people think of a library as a community center. That's what it should be.
I do too.
Midnight in Chernobyl is the book that's been selected by South Butler for discussion today. And it's a true story. The untold story, actually, of the world's greatest nuclear disaster. You were mentioning the town that was built right next to the plant.
Pripyat.
Yeah, right along the Pripyat River, which mm-hmm. is what I got the name for it. There is actually a town of Chernobyl a few miles away, but they didn't call this new town Chernobyl. They came up with the name Pripyat. There were some other names that were considered. North Kiev. When I read that one, I said, what? Kiev is a huge city, largest city in Ukraine, and it's about 60 or 70 miles south of Chernobyl. But anyway, the name of this town that they built was Pripyat, and as Kate said earlier, this was a model town.
Yes.
They built it from scratch. This was just a marshland next to this river in Ukraine whenever in 1970 they picked this spot. And they ended up building this town. It had an amusement park. Mm-hmm. It had theaters. It had beautiful parks and trees. The first director of the whole project who came there loved flowers, and mm-hmm. so he ordered rose bushes. For he wanted one rose bush for everybody that lived there. And that's like 20,000 rose bushes. They planted them.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it was a beautiful, beautiful town.
And the I thought was interesting, the architect of the city that they hired was a woman. And then they called her in. So she designed the buildings, and they wanted all the buildings to be very utilitarian. And she tried to give it a little bit of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a very likable character. It's weird to call her a character. She's a likable person in the book. They call her in then when they finally decide that they're going to evacuate these lovely people in Pripyat who they just kept telling them not to worry about it. There's nothing wrong. Meanwhile, they show them, they stand on a bridge to look at, you were talking about the blue light that came out of the fire. Well, these people are standing on a bridge, you know, amazed looking at this blue light, not realizing that's just radiation.
Yeah.
They're just taking in so much radiation at that point. But they call this lady in, and she needs to kind of start from scratch and start drawing some maps and figure out how they are going to evacuate this many people. They call in 1,200 school buses to get the people out. And the people assumed that they were just leaving for like a day or two. They had no idea. I think later in the book, they do get to come back for a very short period of time and go to their apartments and gather certain things. They weren't allowed to bring, there was like a list of things they weren't allowed to bring. But then they take all these people out of the city. Where are they going to put them? So they put them in other cities around Chernobyl or in Kiev, wherever. And the residents of those cities don't like them. Don't like these people because now the government is just giving these people money mm-hmm. because I think they realize that a lot of them are going to become sick and they're going to have problems and now they no longer have homes or livelihoods. So it's rough for those people. Oh, and they weren't allowed to take their animals.
Yeah. There are pictures of what this abandoned model city of Pripyat looks like now. Pictures of children's toys, you know, lying in a parking lot of these high-rise apartment buildings that they constructed. There's one picture I saw of an old rusting piano that's just left there. I mean, the city was in ruins, you know. And there's a whole, like a 30-square-mile exclusion zone now. Nobody can go in there.
Right.
The 30 square miles around the nuclear power plant's all blocked off.
Well, now, yes.
Now it is, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But in the days following, so they're calling in all of these firemen to come in and put out these fires. And the firemen that were there moments after the fire started were the first casualties. So they went to the hospitals, and then a lot of them were airlifted to Moscow. They were doing so poorly. But they kept coming. The firemen kept coming.
Yeah.
And then they brought in... So the Soviets did decide that they needed to get some experts on hand, right? And they brought in Legasov, who's an engineer. And then the... What would you call a Soviet man? Like, he's a party man.
Comrade?
Yeah, Shcherbina, I think is his name. Shcherbina. So I was listening to a podcast discuss this book so I could get a better understanding of it because there's so much information. And they describe these guys. So Shcherbina is your Russian guy. And Legasov is your just engineer scientist.
Mm-hmm.
They describe him from the movie Jaws. Shcherbina is the mayor of the city, Amityville, that's saying there's no problem. You can go swim in the water, nothing. And Legasov is the Chief Brody saying, everybody stay out of the water, get out of the water. And there's basically this back and forth between these two then for the next... It literally takes half of the book, but it's 2 days, 2 to 5 days that they're together. Legasov trying to get Shcherbina to get the government to do the things they need to do. So they need to start dumping sand or boron or something on the fire from above. So they just have helicopter doing sortie. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah. But even that turned out to be a disaster because they dumped 5,000 tons of sand. Mm-hmm. Folks, it's hard to describe unless you can see a picture. And there were some aerial photographs mm-hmm. of reactor number 4 after the roof blew off. And it's just a pile of rubble.
Right.
And they dumped 5,000 tons of sand from helicopters until they realized that that was damaged. The weight of all the sand being plopped down was damaging the base mm-hmm. Of the reactor. And they were afraid that all this radioactive water was going to leak into the water supply of 30 million people because it was built right beside a river that leads into Lake Kiev. So they had to stop dumping the sand. And think of all the helicopter pilots that flew right over this thing and were dumping sand. They were all getting radiation poisoning, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So they've done this, though, within, 48, 72 hours?
Mm-hmm.
They're working diligently on this, and then they realize their radiation number, it's still rising. It's still getting higher and higher. So now they decide they've got to go underneath and do something with the water. How about that for a description?
No.
I bet the scientists listening are just thrilled with that.
Well, neither you or I are nuclear physicists, so... They have cooling reservoirs that they constructed next to the plant.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, you have the control rods and the cooling water, and it's a very complex system. He tried to describe it, but it was a little bit over my head, quite frankly.
I just didn't care.
The operation
of an entire
nuclear plant. By the way, there were plans in the works. They built 4 nuclear reactors at Chernobyl. They were going to build 4 more.
Yeah.
Right beside him. And then, of course, when reactor number 4 blew up, those plans went out the window.
Do you happen to remember the term? So many lives, so many of the citizens of Russia stepped up when they knew that this wasn't going to turn out well for them. And in addition to the firemen and the helicopter pilots, there were the men that had to run onto the roof, what was left of the roof, where this horribly radioactive graphite, chunks of graphite, mm-hmm. and they were allowed to be on the roof for 4 minutes. What they called them bio, they tried to get robots to come do it, and they would put the robots out there, and the robots would just die.
Yeah.
They couldn't function because of the radioactivity. So they had a word for humans. It was bio something.
Can you imagine that, forcing these men to go in and
right.
work on this? The final decision to try to seal it up was to build a huge concrete dome mm-hmm. over reactor number 4. But even that took construction workers who had to come in and build this concrete dome. So they were all subject to radiation poisoning as well.
Right, right. I think over time it minimized because they did do some things. So then the miners went in and they did something. And just finally, it just kind of burned itself out. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, and what's left, they covered up.
Mm-hmm.
This was another one of the, I would say, elementary physics lessons that Higginbotham gave, which I found interesting because, as I said before, physics has always been a little bit beyond me. I knew some of these terms before, alpha particles, beta particles, and gamma rays, but I had no idea, what the difference was. Let me see if I can give a quick summary on that. Please, don't take any notes, because I'm just, just giving you a quick summary. Radiation, first of all, it's invisible. It has no taste. It has no smell. Now, they could see for a while this blue pillar of flame that was going up from the top. Radiation is produced by the disintegration of atoms. So when you're bombarding the atoms to release this heat, to boil the water, to create steam, to create electricity, you're producing radiation. High-energy radiation is called ionizing, and that's the kind that would come from a nuclear plant like this. There are 3 forms of the radiation: alpha particles, beta particles, and gamma rays. Alpha particles are large, heavy particles. They cannot penetrate your skin. However, if they're swallowed or inhaled, they cause massive chromosomal damage. Radon, alpha particles, we hear about that because that's generated naturally in, many people's basements from the soil. Those are alpha particles. Then there's beta particles. They are much smaller, and they can penetrate human skin and cause burns and genetic damage. Strontium-90, which I can remember reading about when I was a kid in, I don't know, Reader's Digest or something like that. There was worries that that was getting into cow's milk from nuclear tests that were still going on in the atmosphere. Thank goodness not happening anymore. So those are the beta particles. And then finally there's gamma rays, which is the highest form of radiation, and they can penetrate anything short of thick concrete or lead. Now, I knew about lead because, you know, you see that at the dentist's office or the doctor's office where technicians wear lead aprons and so on and so forth. They have to leave the room. I didn't realize that thick concrete could stop radiation. And that, of course, is what they finally did with reactor number 4 at Chernobyl. They built this concrete dome over the top of it to seal it off. Still, nobody can go near it. I certainly wouldn't want to go near it.
Right.
I wouldn't even want to live in Kiev or any of these towns that are, you know, 70 miles away.
They don't have a choice.
I guess. One of the things that I found interesting about this, in addition to the, you know, the facts about alpha particles, gamma rays, and all that sort of thing, was the way Higginbotham humanized it. Because I never stopped to think about the people that were there.
Right.
Not only the nuclear physicists, the engineers, and the construction workers, but their families. The one gentleman, the chief project engineer, and I'm looking through my notes here for his name, Kate, Viktor Bukhanov. Okay, I'd never heard his name before. He was the chief engineer from the very beginning for the design and the construction of the model city and the nuclear plant.
Okay.
But his wife's name was Valentina, and they had two kids. I never stopped to think about that.
Right.
And they lived in Pripyat, just like everybody else, and they had to be evacuated.
Well, there's good guys and bad guys in this story, and he starts out as a good guy but kind of ends up as a bad guy. Spoiler alert. He was one that was in denial and not believing the stories that were being told him. He kind of aided in not letting the people be evacuated. But when you look at the people that were over him, and the threat to these people is the KGB, you know, that's a common threat. So
we don't have that in this country.
No.
This was permeated all of Soviet life.
Right.
You mentioned that there was a mayor of Pripyat, but there was also an operative from the Communist Party in Moscow who really had the final say, even over the mayor.
Mm-hmm.
And there were KGB agents all over the place, secret police. And everybody had to answer to them.
Yeah.
You know, whether you were the chief project engineer like Bukhanov or anybody, they were always watching you.
Absolutely. And so this Dyatlov, was it Dyatlov or Bukhanov? It was Bukhanov. Okay, so in the beginning, he was the one that went into the woods to build the city.
Mm-hmm.
He, after 2.5 years of struggling with the shoddy things that were sent to him to build a nuclear power plant, he had it. He was done, and he went in to resign.
That's right. I forgot about that.
The person he handed his paperwork to resign just ripped it up.
Said, go back to work.
Go back to work.
And he didn't have any choice.
He doesn't have a choice.
Yeah.
So that's how things run. And he does become kind of a bad guy. And I think at the end, he is found guilty, and he gets sent to the, what is it called?
The gulag.
Gulag, yeah.
Here's a one-way ticket to Siberia.
Right, right. Which, you know, whatever. I wanted to talk about something. Oh, you were talking about the radiation.
Yeah.
This is kind of gross. But what happens when you get radiation poisoning?
I think it's important that we mention this because it takes it from the abstract, you know, okay, there's nuclear disaster, right down to the personal. What happens?
So once the onset of symptoms appeared, the opportunity for effective treatment was passed. The horrifying decline of the Chernobyl patients unsettled even the most experienced medical professionals as skin blackened and peeled back, muscles congealed, intestines melted and poured out of anal cavities, and beta burns spread, continuing to burn into pain-inducing comas or unimaginable fevers and internal hemorrhaging.
And obviously nothing that could be done.
Ew. That sounds awful.
Mm-hmm. You almost think the ones who died instantly were blessed and not having to go through this excruciating slow death by radiation poisoning.
You're absolutely right. Mm-hmm. So then, America to the rescue, Dr. Robert Gale hears about this. I think he was in California. And he goes to Russia, and he goes to Moscow. I'm coming to save the day. I'm going to help these people. And he arrives in Russia just himself. And they're like, where's all the stuff? Where's all the medicine? Why didn't you bring stuff to help us? And together with the doctors in Moscow, then they start to treat these patients. And so Higginbotham even goes into that part of it, the story, which is the more human element.
Let's talk a little bit about the politics of this whole issue, but I think we owe for one more break, so let's do that, and we'll come back and wrap up our conversation about a depressing but fascinating book, Midnight in Chernobyl. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be right back.
When it's time to choose a funeral home, there are many things to consider. The facility itself, does it provide the atmosphere that the occasion requires? Are they people I can comfortably talk with about the kind of services I need? Is the cost within my budget? Should we consider cremation? There are so many questions. Let Thompson Miller Funeral Home in Butler help you with some answers. After all, Thompson Miller has been serving the Butler community since 1927. The same family has been serving Butler for 92 years. They are in many ways truly a part of our community. Thompson Miller provides complete services with dignity in the funeral home, at gravesite, and for entombment. Thompson Miller will help you through the process with advice, counsel, experience, and compassion. Call us and we'll help you make these important and sensitive decisions. 724-287-3706, 287-3706, or visit us online at www.thompson-miller.com. Thompson Miller, at the corner of East North and McCain Streets in downtown Butler. Thompson Miller, time-honored excellence.
Talking about Midnight in Chernobyl, the untold story of the world's greatest nuclear disaster by Adam Higginbotham. As I mentioned earlier, this is an exhaustive study. It's close to 500 pages, but it's a tremendous eye-opener. It really is. Makes you. I had to stop every once in a while and just say, I got to wait a little while. I don't want to read any more of this right now.
It's good to balance it with something, you know, light, maybe. Pick it up every now and then. But I would recommend reading it to people. And I always kind of tell people this. There's no test. You don't have to write a book report. Mm-hmm. Just read it and enjoy the parts that you like and skim through the parts that might be too technical. There's no test at the end of it.
I agree. We had Three Mile Island that came some 13 or 14 years after Chernobyl. Fortunately, no major problems from that. We had Fukushima in Japan with the tsunami that flooded that big electrical generating nuclear plant. And that was in 2011. Wasn't as bad as Chernobyl, but it was very bad. There were radioactive stuff that washed up on the Pacific shore of the United States, came the whole way across the ocean from Fukushima. I also couldn't help, as I was reading this, to think of the movie The China Syndrome. Did you ever see that movie, Kate?
I saw it, but I don't remember anything about it.
It's fictional, of course, and it's quite a long time ago. Mm-hmm. As I recall, it came out right about the time of Three Mile Island. Of course, it had been made a couple of years before that. It was just a coincidence. Jack Lemmon, Michael Douglas, Jane Fonda. And the parallels were so tremendous. You know, Jack Lemmon China syndrome, suspected that something was wrong with this nuclear plant, and he kept trying to tell people, you know, it's going to blow, and nobody believed him. Mm-hmm. And all, no, it can't happen. We're just going right on. And, of mm-hmm. course, eventually it did blow. He was actually shot by security guards because he locked himself in the control room and refused to do what his superiors told him to do. And they broke in and shot him, and, of course, turns out he was absolutely right. But I kept thinking about this movie.
Really?
China's Syndrome, as I was reading this book. Of course, this really happened.
It did, and I guess the China Syndrome in our book that we're discussing really did sort of happen in that, I mean, was the idea in the China Syndrome that the nuclear thing was going to burn the whole way through the center of the Earth? Was that the idea?
That was kind of...
So it didn't happen. So They revealed shocking confirmation that the China Syndrome had taken place after all at Chernobyl, and that the reactor had simply burned itself out, not at all affected by the 17,000 tons dropped from helicopters to quell it. So it did burn itself out, and it created something called the elephant's foot, which I think they went in with cameras, which were able to see. But it's some big kind of blob of, I don't know, uranium and other things that looks like an elephant's foot. Hey, I wanted to talk, though, briefly.
Yeah.
When you were talking about things that happened around the world. What did you think within the last month when the Russians just had a nuclear issue with a rocket?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, and how much, after reading this book, how much do you believe what they've told us? And how much do you think they're holding back?
Oh, without question, they're holding a lot back, yeah. And you wonder about, you know, whether or not nuclear testing is going to resume again because treaties are being abrogated. And, well, that's why I thought this book was so harrowing, you know.
But when they said, I don't remember how many scientists they told us died, I was like, well, do we believe that number?
It was probably,
I'm thinking it's on the low side.
I was going to say it's probably a heck of a lot more. What about the politics of this time? Ronald Reagan was president of the United States at the time of the Chernobyl disaster in 1986. Mikhail Gorbachev was the leader of the Soviet Union. He ended up having to resign when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. And he said the big reason why it happened, why he had to resign from office, was Chernobyl.
Oh, I'm sure.
That was one of the things that brought him down. And he said one of the things that brought down the Soviet Union. Now, it was on the way down, and we didn't realize this. There was a term that Higginbotham referred to as the era of stagnation.
Yeah.
Whenever the Soviet Union got the idea for this string of nuclear plants, and their society was already going downhill. They had shortages of food, poverty, and all kind of other stuff. And the thing that you mentioned, Kate, where, you know, everybody just followed orders, you know, all the way up the line, era of stagnation. And Gorbachev referred to this as well whenever he resigned on mm-hmm. Christmas Day of 1991. And that was the end of the Soviet Union. And he blamed, among other things, Chernobyl.
Well, I mean, if nothing else, it cost them lives. It cost people didn't believe in them as much as they did, and just the cost of it.
It was billions and billions of dollars to try to remedy this and clean it up and cover it up and everything else, and that contributed to the financial problems of the Soviet Union, which led to the eventual breakup. So there was a lot more to this than just the accident, which I found out by reading this book.
Right. I think it would have been boring if it was just about the accident.
And as we mentioned before, it reads like a novel. Every once in a while, he'll give you kind of a cliffhanger ending for a chapter. I know one thing that I noted, Brukhonov, who was the designer of the model city of Pripyat, they had a place reserved to put a statue of Lenin, which every Soviet city had. They didn't have the statue yet, but they had the podium on which he was going to sit. They did have a statue of Prometheus, which Brukhonov wanted put in there, mm-hmm. the Greek god who stole the gift of fire and brought it down from Mount Olympus. And of course, this referred to the nuclear energy and so on. But he wraps up one chapter by saying, ah, yes, but that wasn't all the greatest, because Zeus, the king of the gods, was very irritated that Prometheus had stolen the gift of fire and taken it down off Mount Olympus. So he chained him to a rock.
Mm-hmm. And a bird came and, what, picked his liver
picked
out every
his
day?
Liver out every day. And he said that was a harbinger of what was to come.
Mm-hmm.
And this statue of Prometheus there in Pripyat.
That's true.
Good selection.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You know what was interesting? You always talk about the other books that the author has written.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's written any other books.
I don't think so either.
But he writes for the New York Times. He writes for a lot of magazines, and he's published in short story forms.
And he obviously did a tremendous amount of research for this book. I can't imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I would read anything else he wrote. He's very easy to read.
I agree. Well, thanks, Kate Lindsay. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I shall give you this book if you don't mind taking it back and either putting it on the truck. I'm not sure what library that came from.
It's ours.
Yours?
Yep.
Take it right back and put it on the shelf.
Thank you.
Kate Lindsay is on staff at the South Butler Community Library in Saxonburg. And that's our book talk for today. Next month, Mars will be here to talk about the book Made. M-A-I-D, Made. Hard work, low pay, and a mother's will to survive. She takes a job as a maid. Stephanie Land is the author. I haven't started to read it yet, but we'll be talking about it in late September.
Sounds a little later.
It does sound a little later. I think after the nuclear disaster, yes. I'm ready for that one.
Right.
All righty, that wraps it up for today. Nice to have you with us, folks, and I hope you can be back tomorrow at 12:30 for the Tuesday edition of It's Your Turn.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.